Get ready for Changing Worldviews with Sharon Hughes, the 30-minute show packed with an hour's worth of information, bringing you familiar guests on important issues such as immigration, education, the Middle East, culture, religion, and the changing worldviews of Americans and the world. You've seen her on Fox News. You've read her on the World Wide Web. Now here's Sharon.
For such a time as this.
Freeing the minds of the brainwashed masses.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the show today. I'm so glad that you tuned in. I'm very excited to have with me today Dr. Herbert London, who's the president of the Hudson Institute and the author of America's Secular Challenge, The Rise of a New National Religion, which has been our Woman Talk Fall Book Club selection, using this book as a foundation to build on in our new Worldview series for our book club. So when we get back from this break, Dr. Herbert London will join me. You don't want to miss today's show. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Sharon Hughes, not afraid to say it like it is, even on the most controversial topics, bringing you the real story behind the news on the issues that matter most.
Thank you, everyone, for staying with us today. My guest, Dr. Herbert London. Let me tell you a little bit more about him. Dr. London is a noted social critic whose work has appeared in nearly every major newspaper, including the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. He's also the author or editor of 22 books. The former professor of humanities at New York University, he graduated from Columbia University and received his PhD from New York University. Well, Dr. London, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us today. Welcome to Changing Worldviews.
Well, Sharon, it's a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
And I'm going to just say some of the things that you said in your book and then like for you to expound on them, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay, so one of the questions you raise is Western culture killing itself and when it's dangerous to be tolerant. You say we're too tolerant for our own good, and you take pains to show that beliefs matter and that culture is important. Why?
Well, I think belief matters, and I think that you want people to be tolerant. But tolerance has its limits. When I wake up in the morning, I am not tolerant about the tie that I'm going to wear, and I engage in a form of discrimination. It's always a question of the kind of discrimination that we engage in. Now, it was George Santayana who once made an interesting observation. He said the first and overarching responsibility of the tolerant person is to be intolerant to intolerance. We find ourselves in a position where we continually accommodate a variety of intolerant behavior, including those people who would use our First Amendment to undermine the First Amendment, who would use our Constitution to undermine the Constitution. It seems to me we should draw the line. We have sacrificed blood and treasure in order to defend our First Amendment. And yet, interestingly, we find that many people are now engaging in a form of unilateral surrender, giving up these freedoms that we have fought so very hard to obtain. For example, Random House very recently has decided not to publish the Sherry Jones novel on Aisha and the Prophet Muhammad, largely because they were very much concerned about the response from the Muslim community, that it might lead to a violent response to some of the employees at Random House. And so here, one of the most prestigious firms in the United States decided to cease publication of a perfectly reasonable novel. Well, what does that suggest to you? And then even our State Department has said time and again, we will not use the words terror and Islam in the same sentence because we don't want to offend the sensibility of some people. And we even had, of course, the Danish cartoon incident where the publications in the United States refused to reproduce the Danish cartoons because of the fear of intimidation. Mm-hmm. So these are very significant problems that we now face that are related to this whole tolerance issue. Now, again, the only area where people are seemingly intolerant is when it comes to environmental questions. And there, of course, that's the new paganism. It seems to me, in every other respect, people have gone overboard in attempting to accommodate views that are certainly outside the American mainstream.
And you talk quite a bit in your book, obviously, the title bears that out, that we really have, shall I say, have submerged ourselves in the self-centered philosophy of secular humanism, which is against religion, which, if I can use these terms from a modernist standpoint, right and wrong, good and evil, versus the postmodern, everything's relative. So why have we seen this cultural change here in the United States? What would you say?
Well, the postmodern world does not want limits. We have tried to go beyond those limits, and we have now even put ourselves in the position where there are virtually no taboos. And again, it's part of the moral relativism that exists in this kind of radical secular world. And with this kind of radical secularism, you find yourself in the position where, one, you reject religion and the standards and moral standards that are associated with religion, but more importantly, in doing so, you also undermine the very character and foundation stone of the United States. We want to take religion out of the public square. We don't want it to be part of public discourse. We think that religion should only be seen seen in the home. It should be a private enterprise. And yet, curiously, if that's the case, then you lose the sense of what America is all about. Our Constitution, after all, is an Augustinian document. It is predicated in the idea that mankind has original sin. And as a consequence of original sin, we're fallible. And therefore, we need checks and balances in our government. That's why we have a tripartite system of government. It is directly related to the Judeo-Christian tradition. And Jefferson, a deist, made the point that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Why is that important? Well, it's important because if the state confers those rights can be taken away. But if God confers those rights, they may be reinterpreted, but they cannot be eliminated. As a consequence, we are in a unique position. Most people aspire to the American position largely because they understand how valuable those liberties, those rights are. It is not coincidental that when those kids in Tiananmen Square in 1988 were protesting against the Chinese government, what did they build? They didn't build a monument to the Prophet Muhammad. They didn't build the Eiffel Tower. They built the Statue of Liberty because the liberties that they aspire to are the very liberties we enjoy.
And we have so lost sight of that in our culture. The things that you have just said would be considered archaic. I mean, if you were on Fox News saying that, those on the opposite would argue with you and say, no, we are not. We were not a nation established on religion and would cry out for the separation of church and state. You know, it's one thing to have a point of view. It's another to be ignorant about really what our history is all about.
Obviously, you want to give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. But I think it's very different to suggest that we aren't informed by religion. Of course, we're informed by religion. Our morality, our standards are very much informed by religion. We have a constitution that talks about the Establishment Clause, and we will not have an established church. But at no point does the Constitution say a word about the separation of church and state, nor does the Constitution say anything about people wanting to believe that religion is one of those informing characteristics of a society. In our society, that Judeo-Christian tradition does, in many ways, serve, as I suggested before, as the foundation stone of what this country is all about.
And that foundation is different than any in any other country, which says we will not establish a religion, but we will not prevent the free exercise thereof. There are those that want to squelch the free exercise thereof.
Well, I think that that's precisely the point, and that comes out of the same kind of radical secular view where religion should not play a role at all in the public sector. You may remember a wonderful book written by Richard Neuhaus, Father Richard Neuhaus, called The Naked Public Square, in which he made the point, if we take religion out of the public square, we're losing a good deal of what we are as a people. Sam Huntington wrote an extraordinary book called Who Are We? Well, what are the American foundations? Are very much related to Protestantism. You don't have to be a Protestant to understand and appreciate the fact that we live in a Protestant culture.
Yes.
That we, in some ways, often lose sight of the fact that we are living in a Protestant society.
Yes. Well, just for the record, and for those, especially in the younger generation that haven't received the education that perhaps you and I did in school, what do you mean, or what is an accurate description or definition of secular humanism? And in a nutshell, if you had only 1 minute to say it, how has it changed our culture?
Let me describe it in 1 minute, and I'll try to be as brief as I can, because there are a number of doctrines and characteristics associated with this radical secularism. One, of course, is this multiculturalism, which very often takes the form of self-loathing of the United States. The second, of course, is the loss of confidence, belief that the United States will not inherit the future. The 20th century may have been the American century, but the 21st century might be the Chinese or maybe the Islamic century, but not the American century. It's a kind of Spenglerian view. The third is a kind of utopian illusion that the world is really all one, we're all the same, we can all live together. Mr. Obama, I think, put it very well when he said that he's a citizen of the world. That's a kind of transnational progressivism. And then the moral relativism is obviously another one of these conditions, and the atheism that I made reference to before. So these are the characteristics of this radical secular view, and it has influenced American life, even though most Americans do not consider themselves to be radical secularists. The numbers in this category may be very small, but the influence is very great, largely because the elitists in our society generally embrace these views, and certainly the people, most people in the media embrace these views. So this is the condition that you face in America today. It is having an insidious effect on the way in which we think about ourselves, our future, our country, and our children. So I think that these are all very much related to what I would describe as ideas that have been floating around in the culture before but have now come together in the form of a new religion.
Very well put. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a break here. You know, Robert Bork said about Dr. London's book, Herbert London mounts a powerful and persuasive argument that the undermining of the Judeo-Christian tradition by its secular rival causes a failure of resolve in the West at a time when it is necessary to confront the existential threat of radical Islam. Islam. America's Secular Challenge, the name of the book, deserves to be widely read and deeply pondered. And when we get back from this break, we're going to ask Dr. London specifically how to defeat fanaticism. Stay with us. You don't want to miss what he has to say next.
Changing Worldviews Talk Radio is an issues-driven show featuring the news or the side of the news often ignored by the mainstream media. Sharon's guests have included candidates, senators, and other government leaders, public policy and pro-family experts, authors, doctors, and religious leaders, Protestant, Catholic, and Jew, such as David Horowitz, Michelle Malkin, America's Rabbi Arya Spiro, Phyllis Schlafly, and Dr. D. James Kennedy. An advocate for the innocent, the persecuted, and our troops, Sharon continually encourages her listeners to boldly support the right and expose the wrong. If you share Sharon's passion to increase the pro-America and family voice in our 21st century society, we invite you to partner with us. Log on to changingworldviews.com. Sign up today and receive our best show of the month on CD, Sharon's Saying It Like It Is newsletter, and more. Changing Worldviews with Sharon Hughes. Broadcast journalism you can trust.
I'm Stuart Shepherd. This is Stoplight.
I love this time of year, when the nation's largest retailers go way out of their way to wish me a happy non-specified holiday. Eddie Bauer sent me their holiday book, some outfit called Hearthsong offered me holiday savings, and Shutterfly wants me to create a holiday card with holiday designs to spread holiday cheer. Now, I'm sure some company spokesperson is about to jump out of his or her chair right now to say, "But what we mean is all these wonderful holidays." But they all want me to buy holiday gifts, and when was the last time you heard someone say, "What are you buying your kids for Thanksgiving this year?" And you know, I've never seen them feel the need to combine their Valentine's Day and President's Day sales. Since so many retailers seem to be having a problem remembering that other name for December 25th, at my house I've created a special holiday just for retailers. I call it Tossmas. I get a copy of Crate and Barrel Holiday. I don't even open it. I just say, "Merry Tossmas." Lillian Vernon says she's very excited to share this holiday season with me. I figure that must include Tossmas. QVC sends me Gourmet Holiday. Feliz Navitas. LL Bean sent me a holiday catalog and a Christmas catalog. Now you're speaking my language. Look, big retailers who want my money, I know you're just trying not to offend people, but just so you know,
you're offending us!
And you know, I actually like some of your stuff, and I may still buy something from you. But here, let me speak your language. Who's more likely to look through your holiday catalogs to buy your Christmas decorations, your Christmas cards, and your Christmas gifts? Someone in the more than 90% of Americans who celebrate Christmas, or someone who claims to be offended by the very word? Merry Christmas.
Sharon Hughes, bringing you the real story behind the news.
Thank you, everyone, for continuing with us today. My guest is Dr. Herbert London. He is the author of America's Secular Challenge, The Rise of a New National Religion. Yes, that's right. We've been talking about secular humanism. He's defined that for us. I really recommend our listeners get a hold of his book. I'm telling you, it's a quick read, and it's very thorough. If you want to really understand what's going on in this arena, this is a great book. So, Doctor, let's look for a minute here as you raise about secularism opening the door to radical Islam. You say that the U.S. will succumb to radical Islam unless we realize that beliefs matter. You said that we have been dulled by secular humanism and its doctrine of relative truth, and that Americans refuse to admit that Muslim extremists are sincere, that they curse us. We have talked over and over about this on the show. We've had guests from former PLO terrorists, all of it, just to help our listeners understand that radical Islam means what they say, and they plan to do what they say, and not unlike Hitler, who was giving all kinds of hints about what his intentions were, but the Western world was either not believing him or shrinking from it or didn't want to get involved. I feel we're seeing the same thing happen today. What about you?
There is a lot of truth in what you've just said. Look, Mein Kampf was a clear game plan for Hitler, but the West refused to acknowledge it and even to suggest that it could be taken seriously. World War II could have been avoided had the Western powers decided to stop Hitler in the Rhineland in 1936. We did not do so. And we are now facing a threat of a very similar variety. Radical Islam is more than just a religion. It is also a political phenomenon that has an imperial dimension to it. There is the desire to create caliphates from Madrid to Jakarta. And while I think it's important to note we are fighting battles in Afghanistan and Iraq, it's also important to note that there's a battleground here in the United States. If we do not understand what this country is all about and why our freedom should be defended, it's very difficult to develop the armor, the necessary intellectual and moral armor, to deal with the assault that we're now facing.
Mm-hmm.
So my argument is largely a wake-up call. It seems to me that one of the critical dimensions of this entire struggle is for us to understand that the battleground is a battleground of ideas, and our ideas are very much related to the traditions that gave birth to this nation.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to think seriously about what it means to be an American today and what America means to the world. People around the globe who are living in tyrannies aspire to be like the United States. And so with all of our blemishes, with all of our imperfections, with all of our mistakes, it's important for young people to understand why it is the United States does represent this great hope, this beacon of light for those around the world who are suffering under the yoke of tyranny.
I really appreciate you bringing that up in your book, because it's getting to the place that if you're patriotic, you're feeling by some folks that this is not okay. Let's talk about that for just a second. You say that we've replaced patriotism with this national religion of humanism, and Americans are ashamed of themselves. The Pledge of Allegiance is at risk of being shelved, and the Star Spangled Banner is usually left unsung, and patriots can be expected to be ridiculed. Now, this once very proud American worldview, you say, has been mangled by this new quote-unquote national religion of secularism. Would you explain that?
Let me try to create a little context for that argument. Toynbee once made the statement that civilizations don't die as a result of murder, they die as a result of suicide. What he meant by that is that the loss of confidence, the inability to defend oneself, the belief that history is not on our side, that there's a kind of inexorable movement away from your civilization, these are characteristics that lead to weakness and, of course, led to the fall of Rome and to other civilizations. And that's one of the things that we have to guard against in the United States. Now, while I made the comment about the weaknesses that have arisen as a result of radical secularism, I don't want to overstate the case on this program. Most Americans, I think, share our view. As I stated right at the outset in my disclaimer, this is not a view that is widely held by most people, but the influence is very great, largely because the elitists mm-hmm. that control the buckets of ink and control the news and television stations, these people do share this kind of new religious attitude. But I think most Americans are really quite resilient. Americans face great difficulties and tragedy during the Depression, and we managed to prevail. We have fought World War II, and in 1942, things looked very grim, both Asia and in Europe, and the United States did prevail. We prevailed in the Cold War over a 50-year period, and there were great difficulties and setbacks during that period. So I do not for a second underestimate the resilience of Americans despite the influence and despite the extraordinary power of radical secularism. My book is an attempt to create a wake-up call to Americans and say, look, we're in a struggle. And the struggle is not only in Iraq, it's right here at home. And you have to realize that what we have to do is to assert the traditions that are so important for the fabric and the very character of our nation. And so that's what the book is all about, and that's why I feel it's so important to appeal to people like you and others who have an audience out there that they can talk to.
Yes, you quote in your book Adlai Stevenson, who said, what do we mean by patriotism in the context of our times? A patriotism that puts country ahead of self, a patriotism which is not short, frenzied outbursts of emotion, but the tranquil and steady dedication of a lifetime. That's what our founding fathers understood. That's what they had. That's what caused them to be able to endure to create this wonderful American experience that many call it, and the foundations of which this country has built and survived and is the dream of people from around the world. What would you say to those that say, well, patriotism doesn't matter? And even those of people of faith sometimes say, well, patriotism is exalted above religion, and so therefore we shouldn't be patriotic. There is that kind of thinking out there, too.
Well, I think there is that kind of thinking on both sides of the political spectrum, but I would make the point that we are privileged, really quite privileged, to live in this land of the free. With all of its problems, I think it's very necessary for Americans to understand and appreciate why it is that we are privileged as Americans. The kind of liberties that we enjoy, the guarantees that exist, the prosperity that has generally prevailed, these are characteristics of a nation that has enjoyed an extraordinary run of more than 200 years. So I think that what we have to do in our schools across the country and colleges is, instead of engaging aging and all of the mistakes that have been made in American history, and indeed there have been mistakes, and all of the blemishes, and indeed there have been blemishes, we should also tell the truth. We should say to our students, look at the achievements as well. Don't only look at the mistakes that have been made. Don't only look at the horrors in our history. Also look at these extraordinary achievements and all of the privileges that you enjoy. That, too, has to be part of the equation. And unfortunately, what has happened in so many of our texts and in so many of those people who develop standards for American history in the United States, they only look at one side of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I find so objectionable.
Yes. Well, we're going to take another break, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, I want to delve into more of the onslaught of radical Islam. Is the United States prepared to cope with this onslaught of propaganda? I want to find out what Dr. London has to say about that. And then also we want to talk about the very real realities of the Judeo-Christian culture becoming ashamed of itself, much like we were talking about some that are ashamed of being patriotic, as well as can America regain its cultural bearings? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In addition to our local presence here on KDIA in the San Francisco Bay Area, Changing World Views can be heard all across the nation and the world through our online presence. One of our listeners suggested an idea to help raise funds to cover the cost of airtime by asking our listeners to donate a buck a broadcast. Now, if you generally listen to the show three times a week, that would be only $12 for the month. Although radio is free to our listeners, it's not free to Changing World Views. So if you appreciate the guests and topics covered on the show and the work Sharon is doing to get out the truth, won't you help her this Christmas so she can end the year in the black with a donation of a buck a broadcast? All donations to Changing World Views are tax deductible, so you'll be able to help Sharon and save, too, with the IRS at the same time. You could donate by credit card on our donate page at changingworldviews.com or by snail mail to Changing World Views. Post Office Box 750624, Petaluma, California 94975. Your money will go directly to keeping the show on in your area, and I know Sharon will truly appreciate it. In case you didn't get it all, we'll give our contact information again a little bit later in the broadcast.
I'll never forget the year when Dwayne and I spent our second Christmas together apart. He was in Vietnam. I was a young bride missing and concerned about my husband, and he was in the bush. What kind of Christmas would he have? Those were very difficult days, just like today is with the war in Iraq, and our young troops need our constant show of support. What better way than to send them a special treat this holiday season? Treats for Troops is one organization that can help you do just that. Well, what better time than Christmas to let our troops know that they are in our hearts and in our prayers? Treats for Troops will include a special Thanks from America card with every holiday package that goes out and says in part, know that even though we're not beside you, we're behind you all the way. Now, you can do this via Treats for Troops by going to our Woman Talk website. While the anti-war pundits and protesters make statements in the name of their political view and agenda, our young soldiers are laying their lives down for their country. That's us, for their buddies, and for freedom. They need to know we support their courage, their loyalty, and efforts. Won't you treat the troops this Christmas? Thank you, everyone, for continuing with us. My guest today is Dr. Herbert London. He is the author of America's Secular Challenge, The Rise of a New National Religion. Doctor, why did you feel you needed to write this book now?
Well, I think this book now becomes important largely because, as I said, it's not only the petrodollars that have allowed the Arab world to influence the United States and many of the Western powers. It's also that they recognize a certain kind of a weakness in the West, a kind of accommodationist psychology, an unwillingness to defend the things that they love. There's no question that we have come to love freedom and liberty, but we're not always sure about how to defend it or whether we're willing to defend it or whether we're willing to make the sacrifice needed to defend it. These are the issues that are recognized by many across the globe. They say, you know something, you value life, but for us, we value death. We're perfectly willing to live in the afterlife in paradise, and we're going to act in the name of Allah to spread our religion. This kind of radical sentiment does exist in parts of the world, and they claim it's an advantage that they have over the West. And so we have to be able to stand up and demonstrate that we have the requisite intellectual and moral strength to oppose this kind of assault. And the way in which we do so is by recognizing the traditions that gave birth to our nation and that have sustained us for more than two centuries.
You mentioned that in your book, and as we talked in the earlier segment about the fact that it's not just a threat in other places around the world. It is here in the United States. We've all heard, we've talked many times on the show about the terrorist cells and so forth. There really are two ways that radical Islam wants to take over the world. One is through jihad. The other is through population. And as we've seen, for instance, in Dearborn, Michigan, where majority of Muslims populated that and ran for city council on the boards, and they were able to put through in their laws that they're able to do their five calls to prayer over loudspeakers that go out over Dearborn, Michigan, right here in the United States. And yet you don't see the ACLU, you don't see people complaining, you know, about that, and yet we can't have a nativity scene. Or in New York, where you're from, I understand a few years back they wanted church bells to cease from ringing. I mean, what is wrong with this picture beyond the obvious?
Well, as I said, what has happened is a loss of confidence in what the United States is and a loss of confidence in the Judeo-Christian tradition. As a consequence, what you have are organizations like the ACLU, which either inadvertently or sometimes intentionally become supporters of the very positions that the radical Muslims are taking in America, without any recognition that the constitutional provisions that we've been provided with are very often offended by people who use that constitution because they want to undermine it. They want to change the laws of the United States into a form of Sharia. And yet, does Sharia belong in America? After all, we are a Judeo-Christian civilization. I mean, it was Churchill who made the interesting point that Europe was a Christian civilization. He wasn't saying that everyone had to be a Christian. You could be Hindu. You could be Zoroastrian. You could be Jewish. You could live in Europe and live in harmony. But you had to understand that the prerequisites for living in that civilization was the recognition of what that civilization was all about. And what was it about? What is there in that civilization? Well, it was the rule of law. It was the recognition of individual rights. It was the protection of private property. It was the understanding of liberty. These are the conditions that gave birth to this Christian civilization. And Churchill was quite right. We have to recognize the same characteristics in our society and defend them, be willing to defend them against those that would try to undermine them in our very midst.
Very, very interesting, yes. Let me just tell you, ladies and gentlemen, what's inside of this book so you know what to look forward to. Some of the chapters, Secularism, America's New Religion, we've talked about that. Truth as a Relative Concept, The Limitations of Science, Government's Rationalist Largesse, Patriotism as a Moral Problem, Tolerance, Discrimination, and Discernment. In part two, we're going to get into more. Doctor, why don't you tell our listeners right now the best way to get a hold of your book, America's Secular Challenge?
Well, the book can be obtained from Amazon or in any of the major bookstores, whether it's Barnes & Noble, Walden Books, Borders, and you can also write directly to the publisher, and this is Encounter Books in New York City. So those are three easiest ways to get the books. Amazon is probably the easiest way to order the book.
Okay, great. And in part two, ladies and gentlemen, still we want to talk about the Judeo-Christian culture, why it's increasingly becoming ashamed of itself, we'll ask the doctor, and also can America regain its cultural bearings? You don't want to miss part two. Is there a website you'd like to give our listeners?
Well, the website is Hudson.org. It's very simple, and you can certainly learn a little bit about the book on Hudson.org, learn about the Institute, so all of the information that your audience might be interested in is readily available.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in. I encourage you to also tune into our show tomorrow for our annual Turkeys of the Year. That's on KDIA AM 1640 in the San Francisco, Sacramento area, or online live at KDIA.com at 4:30 p.m. And also on Wednesday, when we will have a former Hitler youth, Hilmar von Kamp, talk to us about his latest book, Defeating the Totalitarian Lie, warning America about what he experienced in Germany and what he sees happening now in our nation. You don't want to miss that interview. And on Friday, we will have our special Thanksgiving show. And so until I see you next time, this is Sharon Hughes saying it like it is.
Thanks for listening to Changing World Views with Sharon Hughes. You can get more information on today's topic or order a CD of today's show by visiting changingworldviews.com or writing us at Changing World Views, P.O. Box 750624, Petaluma, California, 94975-0624. You can also contact us at talk@changingworldviews.com. That's talk@changingworldviews.com. Our program is listener-supported, and we appreciate your tax-deductible donations to help us get the truth out on the important issues Sharon addresses on the show. So until next time, remember, stay alert, stay informed. We live in a changing world.